Welcome back to the Go-To Food Podcast, brought to you by Deli. Deli's a food platform from the team behind Depop that sells the best independent food and drinks products in the world that other shops don't really know about. So head to www.deli.market and discover the thousands of creative products dropping daily and use the code GO2DELI.
Double up.
25% off everything from us. Now, today we are joined by a chef who's had such a huge impact on London's food scene. It's almost sort of immeasurable, especially with the creation of the dairy. We're going to jump into that in a second. A restaurant that defined the sort of Nordic flect, produce-focused fine dining movement that's become commonplace in London today. A wonderful innovator. You've worked for some great innovators in the likes of Marc-Pierre White, Raymond Blanc. We'll also get into that. But also, you're championing the next generation, our mate Ruben, Ruben's Rubens.
Shout out, Ruben.
How did you come across the wonderful smoked wizard?
Well, I had a bakery down in...
He smoked.
Yeah. Well, actually, because he's from Brixton. You know, I live in Brixton as well. And I had a bakery in Brentford, of all places, called Rye by the Water. And we had an incredible outside space. It was a real sort of industrial belt right beside the canal there, hence the name Rye by the Water. And it was always going to be a pop-up, but we got an extra year out of it. So I wanted to kind of end the summer on a big high and basically did a bit of research into the best up-and-coming barbecue smoke guys, you know, people who cared about produce as much as I did. And a lot of people were speaking about Ruben. So I went out and kind of reached out to him and approached him. And then he came down to Brentford, you know, complete audience that didn't know of him at all, and brought the crowds. You know, it was phenomenal.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he's really cool.
His food's
really
cool. I went to the Brixton Market one 3 or 4 times. I mean, he just kept on extending until they took the piss. But you've got Bottle and Rye in the same market.
Yeah, Bottle and Rye, yeah. So Ruben very much, I must say, he's his own man. I just helped him a little bit in his career. So it's not, I'm not taking sort of any shares or anything like that. He helped me fill a space down in Brentford. And then I wanted to help him as well, like get into a spot and a bit of bricks and mortar, which I would obviously still do, but you know, he killed it in Brixton again, which is a tough market.
He's now Peckham Archers.
That's right, killing it there, killing it.
Mentioning the critically acclaimed dairy in the intro, I mean, I still walk past and get quite emotional when I see the magic permeating from the walls. How do you feel?
I fucking go a different route.
Yeah, really?
I honestly do a lot of the time. It's like, it's painful. Do you know what I mean? That was our baby. That was like, we threw everything at it and we opened it with like, you know, friends. It wasn't just me and Sarah. Obviously, I'm the one who took the risk, took the loans and borrowed from friends and family to get it open. But it was such a moment of like the people who were involved created something magic without any press, any PR, minimum budget. And from the moment we opened the doors, we were full and it just went nuts.
Is that where you used to have your Bloodshot supper clubs?
Yeah. That was about 2 or 3 years into opening the dairy. That's what I mean. It was a real creative space. It was like, I'd come up with an idea and I'd say it to the lads who were in the kitchen. It was Dean Parker, Richard Fork, Ben Rand, and another guy, Owen. And I, you know, it was such a kind of, we're going to do, if we're going to come up with an idea, we'll just make it happen. We were all encouraging each other. Like I said, let's get beehives, will we? And Dean would go, I've got an uncle that could get us beehives. 2 days later, we've been delivered 60,000 bees and we put them on the roof with no experience in beekeeping. But we went for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it was fucking awesome.
Bloodshot was another one of those things. It was an idea of like trying to create a late night space for industry where you can go in, you're all at the same pace.
Yeah.
You know, what I found was really kind of challenging as a young chef, probably still do as an old chef. No, medium. What am I, middle-aged?
Medium. You're looking very well. I was saying on the way in.
Thank you. But like to go into a space where you're all at the same level, you know when you meet your pals, I'm sure every chef front of house person can relate to it, where you've got pals that are maybe non-industry or maybe industry pals and you meet them after work, you're playing catch up.
Yeah.
You're probably smashing a few cans on the bus or whatever, just trying to catch up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a little bit unhealthy, whereas the dairy or Bloodshot was like arriving at 11 o'clock, little cocktail, you feel a bit naughty, you know what I mean? And then it was a great platform for some fantastic chefs to kind of...
extraordinary, the people,
Oh my God, like if you look at like the list now, where they are now, from 2 stars in California to sort of their own places, all over the shop, you know? But it was awesome, really
described
special.
As a no-holds-barred space to unwind and let loose post. I mean, how loose did it get? It sounds sort of like a swingers club with food. It sounds amazing.
Well, it was a real sort of like... I guess because it was a load of mad industry heads in at the same time. And at the beginning as well, you could only book through Twitter. So I managed all the bookings. So I almost created who was coming as well. So I'd obviously look out for a few fun heads.
You know
what I mean? And a real mix of people. And also what I liked and I've always liked is a great relationship between front of house and back of house. And I would not, I didn't want, like, you know, very easy to fill it with like one restaurant or a couple of restaurants so it becomes like a staff party.
Yeah. Mm.
I was only allocating a couple of tickets per person to really try to mix up different restaurants and front of house, back of house, and get them on communal tables. So it just naturally happened. And after a few drinks, it's super dark. And then music was a big part of it as well. So you'd have like the most insane food from, you know, chefs who were up and coming, probably cooking in some of the best kitchens, but were not writing the menus. It was their first opportunity to actually write the menu. So sometimes you have, you're witnessing cooking that was probably elevated beyond some of the kitchens they were even working in, you know, and they were working hard to, it was their platform to do something great. So you, if you imagine sitting in that environment, you know, and it was wild. Yeah. Like the very first one we did was Dean, who's now up in Glasgow, and he did a Reservoir Hogs dish. And we basically like whole confit spiced up pig's heads that were confit, and then like smashed them in an oven, crisping them up. But we went so far as to dress them in like a little white shirt and a bow tie.
That's awesome.
Or like a tie, and then sent out like a bowl of kimchi. You had to kind of serve gloves instead of cutlery to rip it all apart. And then a fucking fresh pig's blood, like a fresh boudin, just made in a blender in a big fucking syringe in the pig's mouth.
That's awesome.
And then so the DJ would then blast in Reservoir Dogs. You know what I mean? All the theme music for that. Fucking place went wild.
Yeah, mad.
Wild.
It always reminded, I never made this one, but it always reminded me of Chef's Night Out.
Yeah.
When they got back to the restaurant at the end of that show and they kind of make something mad from bits of prep that are about or something they've been working on. Kind of has that energy.
Do you know what? And they actually approached me about it. There was loads of people approached me that wanted to film it and sit around even TV shows.
Nah, it was so much cooler that you couldn't get inside it.
The worst thing about it is if people just start taking a fucking iPhone out as soon as something mad's happening.
Yeah.
You don't want that. You want to just be in the moment.
So
they were all shit photos anyway because it's super
There's no dark. Lights on.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
Your sabbatical in Scandinavia in 2012, when you worked at Noma and Franzine, you know, some of the best restaurants in the world.
Yeah.
Obviously, an incredibly inspirational moment for you. But what was actually more inspirational was going to the smaller places with the music rocking out and like that, you know, slightly refined food, which you then brought over starting the dairy.
Yeah.
Just talk us through for those who missed out on going there. What was on the menu there? How was it different? Because obviously you managed to change the face of London food scene from that. What was on the menu? What was the vibe? What was the philosophy? You had an amazing garden roof, hives, everything.
Well, I guess I was lucky enough in my career to sort of work in restaurants where it was real true farm to table before it's become much more accessible and easy for chefs in London to do that. There wasn't that connection, but from grower to chef or from Debo straight to a kitchen in Lyle's or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't there. And I could see it in places like Scandinavia, in Copenhagen. I could see the direct relationship there. And like I said, when I worked in Italy, I worked in a place called Don Alfonso's that had their own farm overlooking Capri. And he used to arrive in a high ace van filled full of produce. And that's what went on the menu. You know what I mean? So I was exposed to all of that. Mm. And then when I worked in Le Mans Mar, it was similar, but much on a grander scale.
Yeah.
They did use the stuff from the garden. They did buy meat directly from local farms. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you come to London, and this was like 12, 13 years ago now, you didn't have that. So my goal, and then after seeing... I basically did a sabbatical where I took up 6 months off and went to all these different places, like, as you mentioned. That was my goal. I kind of wrote down, I want to get as close to a restaurant by the sea, sitting in a field, but in an urban setting.
Yeah.
And that's what the dairy was. You know, we had this huge, big, long, extended roof, flat roof at the back where we built a frame and used old veg crates and smashed it out of soil in them and went to a nursery to plant loads of herbs and some salad bits and stuff. And then we got the beehives. There was at one point, we tried to do everything ourselves, you know, like we were making charcuterie and stuff. Fucking rogue. Do you know what I mean? Just in like, I'm sure anyone who knows me or seen it before used to take people on tours, they're like, is this fucking legal?
Yeah.
And I was like, for all you EHOs out there, no, it wasn't. It was a locked door that no one was allowed in. Do you know what I mean? It was we had a go at making cheese at one point.
Really?
We called it shit pipe cheese. I let you use the imagination. It didn't work, let's say.
Did it ever get on the menu or not?
No. But then we went to, you know, when we first started experimenting with this stuff, as we got money into the business, we did put in like a full sealed room. We built an infrastructure for the charcuterie, put in a fan, humidifier, all that kind of stuff. So we went in trying everything. And then as we got money in the door, we started to develop or make it a bit easier
to achieve
what we were doing. Like the bread was a real focus. When I went to Franzen, was one of the places I stayed in Stockholm. I think it was two-star at the time. It was actually Franzen and Lindenberg at the time. And I remember seeing the bread course being a real focus of the meal. It was like you saw this it was a little glass case and your bread was proving. That's what you walked into. And then they tell you, you're going to have this in course 7 or 8 or something like that. We're going to take it in and we're going to bake it. And then it was a bread serving and I got it served fresh out of the oven with, like, I don't know, smoked cod roe, loads of different like trout roes and dips that would go really nicely with bread. And you take a moment, you pause. And that was a fucking lightning moment for me. And it made me just really realize that, like, that what I've worked in Michelin star restaurants, I never really got into the whole jellies and foams and, you know, molecular bullshit. Yeah. Never got into it. And what I saw there and what I saw when I went to Echebarre before it was fucking top 10, impossible to get into, I had this chorizo that blew my mind. Do you know what I mean? And he made it. It was a little bit smoky, but it was pure craft. Mm. And that's what I wanted to hone in on. So I got my crew around me and sat around a room and said, look, this is what I want to do. How are we going to do it? And from that very day, due to also my inability to be in the kitchen as much as I would usually be as a bit more of a control freak, I was suddenly pulled out of the kitchen to get the business open and deal with builders that we were nearly fighting with. So then I not let, but almost begged sort of Dean and Richie and Ben. I said, look, this is the menu. I wrote the very first menu. I knew exactly the style that I wanted to do it, but it wasn't like to the tea recipes or anything like that. I said, this is what I want to do. This is the style I want to do it. These are the plates I've bought. This is the kind of environment I want. Mm. This is the wine list approach I want to take. Yeah. How are we going to do it? And it was a total sort of collaboration from day one. And I actually think that the menu that we did there, that like from then, was the best menu I'd ever written to date. That wasn't me. Do you know what I mean? It was a complete collaboration. And it was a lightning bolt moment for me because I felt, okay, I could use my expertise and knowledge and stuff like that, but actually involving key people in some decision making, especially of that caliber, they brought so much to the business.
Yeah.
You know?
What about the two best dishes though, which still live in your memory? Go on.
I mean, I think like once they sort of depict us, I mean the bread course, you know, when we did this bread course was like, it was a beautiful little sort of sourdough bun, like so personal. Yeah. You know, I'd seen a bread sack somewhere in Scandinavia where it kept the bread warm and I was like, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
My mum's a dab hand at like sewing and things. So I got her
She made them.
She made the bread sacks and we filled them with, she made a little sack of beans at the bottom. Yeah. So we used to keep them in the hot place where we would roast, make the bread twice a day in a horrible little deck oven for the first 6 months until we could invest in a rationale. Which Richie developed the bread and then, you know what I mean, painstaking until we could get it actually going, but he still made sure it was perfect every time. And bread in this little sack that was kept warm, there's a little label underneath it that was sewed in, made by mum. Like fucking melt your heart, you know what I mean? And then there was the butter that we were known for, the butter on the stone, which is the smoked bone marrow one. We robbed them from Brighton Beach under the cover of darkness one night. And then it was the our own charcuterie, our preserves from the roof, and then a little cheese with the honey from the roof. Do you know what I mean?
It's unbelievable.
Like, this is in Clapham.
Yeah.
This is not in the Basque countryside.
No.
But yet we were doing things that would remind you of that.
On the pavement in Clapham.
Yes.
I mean, obviously it ended up having to close down because of COVID. Do you ever walk, you know, back to the dairy, find the landlord and say, I put Clapham on the fucking map? What the hell's happened here?
Do you know what? It's painful to see it close, you know what I mean? And I think something great should be in there, you know, but it's
there's nothing in there now.
There's nothing in there. It's been lying vacant for the last, since we left. And I think it's sad to see, you know, it was like, it was our home, you know, like I, you know, my Sarah was pregnant, my wife, with our son Ziggy, who's now 10, like year two or something like that in the business, and he grew up there. Yeah. You know what I mean? He knew exactly where the chocolates were, from the salted caramel. The lads used to have to hide them every now and again, you know, from the age of 3 or 4. Yeah. And then if we're going past in a car and on an Uber or something, he'd point and go, that's daddy's house.
Yeah.
Which you might freak out, but he was brought up in there.
Yeah.
So it's such a personal thing. And I used to meet people, still do, all the time, that went like, oh, we miss the dairy, you know, we had our first date there, now we've got 2 or 3 kids, and it was our favourite place, you know, would you do it again? And the thing is, like, to do it again in a different space is really hard. Sometimes you kind of just have to look at a time and place and say farewell and take what you've learned from it and put the elements of it, which is what I've done with Darby's, into a new space.
Yeah.
But to actually recreate the name of the dairy and put it in something else would be very hard. However, I still have a little bit of hope. I look what Henry Harris has done with Bouchon Racine, and he's done exactly that. You know what I mean?
And he was out of the game for quite a long time
Yes!
before that came. Yeah.
He's gone from, you know, Knightsbridge to fucking Farringdon, you know, and it's like, what an amazing thing.
With like
thing.
A 10 or 15 year gap in the middle.
Yeah, yeah.
I know you love Never Say Museum. Never.
Love it. One of my favourite restaurants.
What about the wine list? I'm not saying anything here, but I was with a couple of people last night in the industry who were slating it.
Really?
Yep.
I don't
the
know.
Wine
fucking,
list. Yeah. What? Yeah.
I don't. I mean, I got no.
I don't know enough about it to be honest. I know what I like. But I'm not a wine snob. No, either. Neither.
I was just.
I don't know.
What are the specifics? What are they saying?
Well, they're saying off a wine list, and I was going, okay.
Okay.
There's wine, and you can buy it.
I tell you what, I do love is the big fucking Armagnac and the big sort of bottles that come around at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's true hospitality as well. You feel like you're in a place that it's like, you know, cooking is passionate, the service is fucking passionate, you know what I mean? And it's like.
You must have had offers to bring the dairy back.
I guess it would. It'd have to be like absolutely perfect. Do you know what I mean? In fact, like, even thought about Dublin, I've always wanted to do something in my hometown, you know, that would be. Probably, you know, a possibility or like, yeah, it would have to be similar in size and similar to culture and similar to demographic even. Do you know what I mean?
Dublin would be cool.
Couldn't be in a new build. It has to be in this sort of beautiful old house. Yeah. You know,
you don't
want
to do what Adam Byatt did when he moved his restaurant to Covent Garden and it all collapsed. Sometimes you need to keep in that magical building, I suppose.
You've
obviously now got Derby, Sorella, Bottle and Rye.
Busy man.
And a couple of others. But can you tell us of those three quickly, sort of one-liners on like how they differ, what they offer?
Sorella is like just the epiphany of a great sort of neighborhood, little Italian, fresh pasta, good little wine list, good playlist, you know. The team's been there. It's a husband and wife team. I see it. It's their restaurant, Ross and Mary. Do you know what I mean? And it's your old reliable. Last minute, let's go in for a plate of pasta, a nice bottle of wine, some great vermouth. Do you know what I mean? That's it. A Bottle and Rye is actually, I would say, we were talking about counterculture recently. I think Bottle and Rye is almost a little bit of a mix between counterculture, certain elements of the dairy, even elements of those Bloodshot Supper Clubs as well, a little bit in there. But it's become a real sort of, it's kind of modeled on the Parisian cafe culture, but we've got a rotation of chefs going in there all the time. I recently had an old colleague, Bosco, who's been cooking in Paris for the last few years, has been in there. And Ali Bor is just taking over now. So it's a platform for chefs to kind of spread their wings. Yeah. A little bit of a P. Franco buzz, but I'll say more counterculture because I did that. And it's South the River, I guess.
Yeah.
And then Darby's is like, I would say it's our sort of flagship. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's where I am. I'm there all the time. I'm on the router full time, and I'm you know, there's so many elements of the dairy there that are just pimped up. Do you know what I mean? We went from baking bread in a lower deck, shitty little sort of oven, to now we've got a full on bakery. You know, that is doing a bit of wholesale. There's a great vinasserie. I can never say that properly. I'm gonna pastries.
Pastries, yeah.
You know, and then there is the open fire cooking, but it's classics. It's a proper bistro cooking. I don't have to come up with something new. I just have to do it the best I can.
Yeah.
And I have all of the same suppliers that I've been working with for years. We've got our own butchery section. We've got a charcuterie room, you know, where we've expanded on that massively, and it's properly temperature controlled, whitewashed, fucking so in there cool. with the red wine. So, and it's an event space as well. It's like a huge music.
Because your dad was a musician.
Yeah.
Famous musician in Ireland, which is quite incredible. But on Derby's, obviously, so many people come to the podcast, shout it out. So many people on Top Drawer and amongst other things. We had David Loftus on last week, the wonderful David Loftus.
Yes.
His favourite place to eat. But tell us, what is the secret to that Sunday roast? Because you are known also for your Sunday roast, oysters throughout the week, beautiful food, as you were just saying. But the Sunday roast, infamous in London.
Do you know what? It does my fucking head in.
I was going to ask that.
After all the years I put in and fucking 2 stars, 3 stars, and blah, 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 to be known for a Sunday roast. But we do do it to the best as we can. And I guess if you take your knowledge of cooking, and I do love cooking big.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, if you go from a sort of a small plate to place, even when we were in the dairy, we might have been cooking small plates, but we would cook whole animals. You know, we get whole animals in, we do a whole shoulders of lamb or legs of lamb, and then we would go through different cuts, and then we would use all of the primes one night. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we've taken a lot of that philosophy and done it on a large scale in Derby. So we about 3 months ago, and we keep upping what we do.
Mm.
So we've nailed the Yorkies. We've nailed the best potatoes by, you know, the ones that Sean Searley put on the map that he might claim he created, but he didn't.
You probably didn't.
He'll kill me for that. Yeah. Now, they're the classic potato, but I am going to give them a shout out because I was influenced by Sean for those potatoes. but, you know, they are the best fucking potato.
Yeah,
and they're the most consistent. So we did all the things that are tick the box of like what are musts, but I think it's the actual, the meat, where we get it from, the quality of the meat, how we cook it, the approach to it, and the selection you get. Do you know what I mean? You've got like incredible pig belly, you've got whole lamb shoulders, you got a choice of a chateau, you know, whole sirloins, or, you know, we're doing whole rumps, and we're doing whole animal butchering, doing that, and you get the holy trinity, you know, where you can get the pig, the shoulder lamb braised, and your choice of beef. I chuck in that beef and bone marrow pie with a croissant pastry on top.
Behave yourself, Robin.
Do you know what I mean? That's why people are shouting out about it. Because, you know, you take something, let's be honest, Sunday roast can be really fucking shit.
Really shit, yeah.
And you're taking on your mum's cooking.
Yeah.
So we've taken on mum's cooking and we've done it to a restaurant level, you know?
You've reduced your mum to sewing... bread basket.
Yeah, she's a terrible cook as well. She won't be listening to this, but you're a terrible cook, Mom.
Where do you like to eat Sunday roast if it's not at Derby's?
Canton.
Yeah.
I will say at home as well. Where else? Canton I fucking love.
Canton's banging, isn't it?
Yeah.
Eating there.
Quality. I'll give Sean another shout out, Sean. You can thank me later. could you tell you? I just love the Canton, to be honest. Yeah, it is one of my favourites.
What about Camberwell? Do you ever go down there? There's beef between the Camberwell and the Canton.
You know what? I've never been to the Camberwell Arms.
Really?
No, I need to go, and everybody says it. But the problem is also, it's very difficult for me to take a Sunday off.
Yeah, now, right. That's
all it is. It is our most intense services now.
How many covers are you doing on a Sunday?
I do 400 plus now.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, and like I say, we're doing serious cooking.
Yeah.
It's not just a roast. You know, we're doing like crab rolls, oysters, like our snacks / larder section is massive as well. You know, and we're all trying to do it to a kick-ass standard.
Do you feel guilty because it's such a successful restaurant? I mean, arguably as successful, maybe if not more than Dairy in terms of scale. Do you still feel bad that you're still sort of fantasizing about the Dairy every single day when you go to bed? It's like your first true love.
It is your first true love. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't feel guilty.
I mean, they're not humans. They're restaurants. Yeah.
They are humans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're a living fucking thing.
Yeah.
I don't feel guilty. I guess. It's like a little stab in the heart when people just say, "I miss the Dairy." You know what's going on? You know what's going on? It's like,
why don't we just go see the landlord?
Well, and punch him in the face.
Punch him in the face.
Wrap him up.
And then say, like, no one's been in this building for 4 years.
Yeah.
Why don't we just bring the Dairy back?
We just fucking take it over. Why don't we just... We'll do it like
spot is right.
You know, a 365-day fucking bloodshot there.
Yeah.
You know, not pay any rent. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. That would be awesome. I think it's time we play Deli Steady Cook. I mean, obviously, you're a great chef. We're going to come into your sort of earlier years in a second. But before we do, we're going to play possibly the most famous food-based cooking show in the world.
Certainly
now Ready Steady Cook's retired. Yeah. It's Deli Steady Cook. Ben, what's in the bag?
I mean, okay. Just olive oil.
Okay, well, but nice. That all over myself.
That's like the hottest ticket in town right now with the prices.
That's true, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just giving it away, will it?
Probably about 40 quid's worth.
Yeah.
The Wolf's Kitchen, Nam Prick Pow.
Very nice.
Delicious gear. So I've got a couple of things from Poon's Wontonaria.
Tangy Thai chili paste.
This, I was quite excited by, knowing your charcuterie history. Wind-dried pork and duck liver sausage.
Ooh,
from Poon's, nice. Which is an unbelievable little place.
So that's dried, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
It's absolutely delicious. And some jasmine rice.
Okay.
And then this, I thought, to be honest, this is a bit of a stitch-up. I hear these are delicious. Pickled tea leaves.
Wow.
From
pickled
Myanmar.
Tea leaves?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's awesome.
And it's a... they sort of cook them in with crispy fried beans, nuts, little stir-fry. Anyway, I think they're meant to be absolutely delicious.
That's a lovely little product.
So you're asking, what would I do with all of this?
Yeah, but you can have a little think about it.
Okay, I'll tell you right now.
Tell us right now.
Yeah, go on then.
I do a filthy... Can I add an egg to it?
Yeah, cool.
Oh, you can bring whatever else you want.
Okay, one of my favourite things, late night fucking snack, you know what I mean? After a few beers, and that's when I think I've probably created some of the best dishes. You know, you've done like a kind of a filthy noodle dish.
Yeah.
I love a dry storage, you know what I mean? To have like a backup you know, chilies, kimchi, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I would do a filthy... rice, jasmine rice with this Nam Prick Pow. I'd caramelize a load of this sausage, fold it through the rice, fried egg, like a proper crispy fried egg.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nice and runny yolk. And then for texture, pickled tea leaves, or for lucidity, this guy.
Yeah.
Smashed over the top. Done.
So good. Easy days.
Easy people. Well, that's for you to keep.
Amazing.
Should we have
you.
A drink, Ben?
Let's have a drink.
As we do, we're going to ask you, what's your go-to cocktail, Robin?
Negroni.
Yeah.
Love a Negroni, a classic Negroni. And I have to say, Bot and Rye does a fucking killer. It's lovely. Does it? And a beautiful snack with it is the anchovy toast. Oh. And you know what? I think that's a thing as well. Coming up with great snacks for like decent cocktails.
Yeah.
Is like a thing that should be celebrated a bit more. It's hard 100%. To do. And whiskey as well.
Yeah. You know?
I do love a whiskey, although whiskey doesn't always love me.
Really? Go on, tell us why not. Just dangerous situations you find yourself in.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you always think you're in control until it's fucking...
Well, is that whiskey you've got in your hand?
6 a.m. in the morning.
I got an Old Fashioned from Cocktails, spelled with a K.
Happy days.
Old Fashioned. That's got whiskey in, isn't it?
It's got full of whiskey.
Oh, no.
Absolutely full of whiskey.
I'm going to...
Yeah, we meant to put Robin like a seatbelt or something.
It's like this Father Ted moment, isn't it? Like,
yeah. What about pre-dinner? Ben and I come around to yours. What kind of canapés are you going to put out for us?
I love a Gilda.
Awesome. Oh, yeah.
Like a San Sebastian Gilda.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, it's like the perfect fucking snack.
Cheers. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me. You know, salty anchovy, spicy pickle, those picante olives from some nice charcuterie. And I just love like, you know, like a proper aged Parmesan. You like stick a little fucking oyster knife in there and just clunk it.
And it's like big salt crystals in there.
Yeah. Or like a super aged Comté.
Yeah.
Just those three things. Mm. Awesome.
So classy. Are you still making charcuterie? Yeah.
Yeah, big time.
Loads of
it. Yeah. Like we've really sort of upped our level of it as well. Otto, who's one of our key chefs, he's senior sous, great butcher, and is always kind of experimenting with them a little bit. So we'll do our standards, pork and fennel salami, coppa. We've got a culatello on the go. We'll make and do you every now and again.
Nice.
It's great for cooking with, but then, and pancettas and lardo and stuff. But he'll always experiment with a couple of rogue, few sausages. Like he loves his hot sauce. The last thing he did was put some weird, wacky hot sauce in.
Nice.
It's punchy.
Yeah.
But and he put a load of smoked paprika in. And actually, it reminded me of that chorizo I had in Echevarri.
Really?
Many moons ago. Mm. I was like, fuck me.
I'm back.
Otto.
Can you get it outside the restaurant? Or is it just making it for you guys?
I'm not selling it outside. I'm just producing it for the restaurants, you know, so Sorella and Bottenry.
What's the first thing you drink in the morning?
Espresso, double espresso, nearly two of them. Yeah.
At work or at
no,
home?
In the morning, just before I leave the house. Okay, I try and do a run most mornings before work and I need an espresso to get me going.
And if you have a hangover?
If I hang out.
How are you navigating that?
Okay, when I lived in Italy, I found the best hangover cure. And I don't always do this, but I do know it's the best pick me up and wake you up and get you back on track. Go I used on. To rent boats down in Napoli all the time. And I used to go get a double espresso, proper Neapolitan double espresso, and a shot of limoncello.
Combined?
No, smash the double espresso first, then the limoncello.
And you're away.
And you're fucking ready for a boat.
I remember when I went to the market in Milan, they drank Cafe Coretto, which I think is double espresso with grappa in it.
Okay. And not that, together, like, just a shot. It's like a pickleback. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, nice.
But together sorts you out as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no, like, it's rocket fuel.
Yeah, yeah.
You're away. Anyway,
you talk about food or
as and well. Food as well, yeah.
If there's food involved, yeah.
I love a Five Guys. You know what I mean?
Really?
I'm super hanging, like a super, like a little. Sort
What's
of,
the order?
Just a small cheeseburger, loads of pickles. I love that American mustard as well.
Mm.
Just that. And I'm like, it's filthy, but it doesn't make me feel any better, but I really enjoy it.
No, yeah, it's nice.
You started out cooking professionally. I mean, you wanted to be an electrician. Your dad said, Robin, mate, you've never changed a light bulb in your life.
Yeah.
Let's rethink the electrician things. But you did end up going to professional kitchen, first one in Dublin. And then suddenly you start working in a restaurant and you're like, this could be a wonderful career for me. And then suddenly everyone's a bunch of cunts and they're all bullies.
Yeah.
Horrible bullying going on. Just tell us your sort of memories of that, because you ended up in hospital one night, I read.
Yeah.
In hospital?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. And that was the thing, I think, because I failed at so many things that I put my hand to. Not failed, I just didn't give everything to it. You know what I mean? I messed around in school, had a great time, didn't study. Then got into football, got all the kit and didn't play. Do you know what I mean? And then piano, wanted to become a fucking musician. Can't become a musician, you don't go to class. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was a letdown for years. To myself as well, you know. So then, when I got into that first kitchen, I remember just going to the Stampa, and I was like, I can't back out of this, you know what I mean? And it just happened to be the most atrocious bullying. Like, bullshit things, just like, you know, I was super keen, I was a total geek, you know?
Yeah.
I was like writing everything down, and like, you know, like, kind of ready, steady, go, what do you need, what do you need? And they did send me downstairs to count fucking lemons and go, how many are there? And then laughing at me, do you know what I mean? It's just like, completely wasting their own time as well as mine. And that was like the weird stuff. But like, when it was busy, it was grand. When it was quiet, that's where they were fucking cunts, you know?
Yeah.
And one time, so when I had the accident, it was during one of the busy spells, and I was trying to help out, and one of the guys was going down on the meat, and he hands me like 20 duck breasts to cook real quick for service. So I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, I don't know what to do, not been showing how to do this. Get a huge big ladle of oil in a pan, and it's fucking on this gas thing, raging hot, and it's about to flip in flames. And then I suddenly went, I've actually seen him put it down, skin side down, in a warm pan.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just go back and just double check this. So I'm like, here, cooking the duck, just cook the fucking thing. So I freaked out, I kind of panicked, chucked the duck breast in the pan, and you can imagine it just went flipped that way, and
all
I just got
you.
A splash of oil right up into my face.
Whoa.
So that was completely, you know, self-inflicted, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
An accident. You know what I mean? You could say, should have been shown how to do it, whatever. I was only fucking...
Definitely should have been shown how to do it, yeah.
Or whatever. But still my fault. What I didn't... what was disgusting was when I came back like way before I should have, and I had like blisters all up around here. Couldn't shave there for years. You know what I mean? In fact, it was blotchy.
Yeah.
And it was coming up all around my face. The head chef, not some Sue or not some fucking... CDP or whatever, the actual head chef, and this was a beautiful big restaurant, it was called Estampa, had a, you know, it was the place to go in Dublin, real glitzy,
yeah,
like the Ivy when it was actually right, yeah, cool, yeah. And it was big, long, you know, all the beautiful waitresses and waiters would come in, and they probably, a lot of them saw the bullying that was going on, and one of the girls was coming over to me, she was chatting to me, she was like, you know, you're all right, how you getting on, you know, you probably shouldn't come back so soon, because my face was blistering.
He was still blistered up, yeah.
And she's chatting to me, and the head chef turned around, what are you doing talking to him for, look at his face, he's got fucking AIDS, keep away from him.
Whoa.
Can you imagine this? In front of a whole fucking kitchen.
Fuck me.
Like that, in front of all these girls, you know. And then, oh, when I first came back after my break from, when I say my break, from hospital.
From hospital, yeah.
I found all the chefs around my station with my recipe book, like laughing at how I'd written down all my recipes, like taking the piss out of me. And then one of them just chucks the book at me and goes, have you got the recipe for duck in there, you cunt?
My God.
You know what I mean?
Fuck,
so like that was just that's a bit of taste.
How
of
long
what
did
it was
you?
Like. Sort of 6 months. I didn't want to stay. Like, I left to go and get some advice because my brother was actually working in a really nice, busy restaurant called QV2.
Yeah.
And that was a family-run business, super busy, city centre restaurant, you know what I mean? And he was like, I went to meet with the head chef, Owen, at the time, and he was like, you do not need to take this. I'll never forget his face when he saw me come in.
Yeah.
You know when somebody's got something on, like...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I know, maybe disability or something. Yeah, he just saw my face and was like, couldn't hold it. Like, he was like, what the fuck has happened, dude? And I wouldn't leave. I wouldn't leave until I knew I could do my job.
Yeah, right.
And I remember the day I got my full wages. I had a job lined up and I was setting up for larder and plates everywhere. I was like, finally got my confidence back. And the sous chef came around just like, give me shit, saying I was over eager. I can't remember what he said, so I just told him to go fuck himself and left. But like, I broke down in tears after it, you know what I mean? And the funny thing is, you kind of park that. It's so weird. I can't even remember any of their names. Can't remember some of their faces.
Yeah.
That's probably lucky for them.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so weird. It's a bit like, I can imagine I've heard about it, read about it. If somebody's been sort of gone through a form of abuse, you pull it away. So
yeah,
you
yeah,
your brain.
Sure. Yeah.
And I went back to Dublin many, many years later for work for the first time, where it was me and Daniel Clifford were the judges on the Irish MasterChef.
Cool.
And that's where it all came up. That's where that article came up. Because the Irish Times were like, oh, Robin, welcome to Dublin. You know, we're lovely to have you here. And I told Daniel about this story because we were near the restaurant. And it brought up all these emotions because I never really hadn't really spoken about it. It brought up all these emotions. And then I get a call for Christmas special. Robin, we'd love an article from you, building coming up into Christmas. It doesn't have to be about food. It's got to be food related. I wrote that story.
That's really?
But it went viral.
Yeah.
It was just when Brexit had been announced.
Yeah.
Brexit was number two. My story was number one in the Irish Times. What? It went far. It went all over the world. I had people from like, you know, established chefs to family members who had relatives that were getting into kitchens that were having a hard time.
Yeah.
I was completely overwhelmed by it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It didn't put you off Turbulent Kitchens though, did it? Because then you moved to London and you end up working for Marco Poi in his 3-star establishment. What was that like? You wrote that the first 3 months were hell. I mean, how hard was it adapting to that kitchen?
It was hard, and it was, and that's what I mean, is that there's a difference between bullying and there's a difference between
just like
extreme sort of pressure.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I think I was cunt of the day or cunt of the week, potentially, when I was there over certain periods. I don't cry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was such a high pressure job, and it was hard because I didn't have the skills at the time. I had to learn how to peel fucking turn potatoes into all different shapes. I had to turn potatoes into banana.
Really?
Yeah. These banana fondants. I don't know if anybody remembers them. I tried to Google them. They don't come up anywhere. Yeah. It was a pigeon dish with like, used to take a big Mars Piper potato, cut it into quarters, shape it into a perfect banana shape. And then when the check came on, goes into duck fat, colour it either side, a couple of minutes, monte a load of butter in, low oven, garlic thyme, take it out. Then you take out the potatoes, put them on your bench, let them cool a little bit, then massage them. Then get your hot fat, get your fat hot, chuck them back in, and they'd souffle up these little banana potatoes. So that's what I mean. I was like, I was going from putting, you know, Parisian melon on a plate with a bit of ham to suddenly going into kind of cooking these things to order, being in charge of all the veg deliveries for the day in a 3-star. It was like intense.
And you worked 6 days a week? Brutal
6
hours.
Days a week, I mean,
what, 18 hour days was it?
Yeah, except for Saturdays, you got a later start on a Saturday. We weren't open for lunch. But I loved it. Do you know what I mean?
Was Marco still cooking then or not?
Marco wasn't. It was Robert Reed. He's now got Le Deux Garçons, incredible restaurant. But he was like a father figure. Do you know what I mean? He was like, he looked after us. I mean, it was, that's what I mean. It was pressure. There was shouting. There was all this kind of stuff going on, but it was never physical, never bullying. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It was just high pressure. And I've seen loads of it. I've seen it like, in other restaurants I've worked in, some of the funny shit, like I remember went so down badly on hot section that I was kicked off the section, sent home, and then having a beer going, fuck's sake, I'm after getting kicked off the hot section, trying to turn into a joke, to then getting called back, come back in and pay for the meal you fucked up.
What?
Yeah.
Who was that with?
Not telling this. Oh, yeah. sorry. But you know what I mean? I laugh about that now, you know? And like, I don't have like hang-ups, so I'm not going to start fucking...
No.
You know,
good nights out when you got to London though, obviously moved from Dublin, bigger city.
Oh my god, like we used to get into like, yeah, the Atlantic nightclub around the corner. Like, you know, I've always looked really young for my age. I was young, I was only 18, so I looked about fucking 14. And I'm going into like this big celebrity fucking place. We'd have a little reserve station, but I created like this I'd love to know where this pole is now, but we used to kind of smash a lot of cans before we went out and went over to Soho or whatever, because it was like, yeah, very close to Soho. And we had a funnel, we had a broomstick with a funnel at the top, and we used to buy like crates of Kronenberg through our one guy, and we'd smash a load of these you know, fucking funnel things like a can in one shot. But it was a great thing, because whenever we got any chefs or industry in, we used to bring them into the kitchen and say, get your name on the fucking broom pole.
There
was people's names and initials.
Where's the
on
pole?
Exactly. I'd love to know this. I'd love to know.
Come on, awesome. Someone track the pole down.
Yeah, it was good fun.
2002, you moved to Italy, actually with a sort of a dream we probably all had, where you lie awake at night and you go like, imagine if I could move to Italy, rural Italy, work in a trattoria for a lovely little Italian family, learn Italian. But you didn't actually end up doing that. You moved to Naples and worked in a two-mission star restaurant.
Yeah, which I really didn't intend on doing, you know. But the thing is that those restaurants do exist, but they are really family-run.
Yeah.
You know, there's no entry in there unless you're part of the family, like, and it's someone's cousin or whatever, and it's not a negative thing, it's just the way it is. So I had two friends who were working there, Fernando, who's got a 2-star in Mallorca now. He was working in Don Alfonso's, and my other friend Paul's got a couple of restaurants in Dublin, Paul McNerney. They were there, and I was like, the only foot in the door was then in high emission, you know. So it was Don Alfonso's was the place. And then all of a sudden, back in that, I call it rat race. I never really wanted to do Michelin again.
No.
But then I went from there to the Manoir.
What was Naples like though? Like working Italian kitchen?
Fucking amazing. Like I said, it was just being exposed to like produce at its absolute best. That's where I really learned about like produce, the level of it, the time it's in season, what to do, how to cook simply, how to like restraint. I learned real restraint there. You know, in the Oak Room was phenomenal, but there was still probably a few too many elements on the plate for, say, which would help me now in Derby's, you know what I mean? I'd go down on a Sunday doing that, you know. But Italy was just phenomenal.
Was it Don Alfonso that had their own fishing boat?
Yeah, their own fishing boat. You know, at 10 o'clock at night, fish would come in, still kicking in the morning, you're trying to fill it, and you would
be going.
Yeah, it's going, you know.
It's funny because Ben Tisch came on the podcast and said the exact same thing about working in those Michelin style places where it's so overly sort of chaotic and so many ingredients and nothing to do with seasonality. And then as soon as he worked in the Italian, he was like, oh my God.
Game changer.
Yeah, cooking the seasons for the first time ever.
And like, you know, I've no problem saying this. There was a mix. There was a mix between kind of old school, new school. This restaurant had been around since 1890, and it was like Ernesto, a little bit younger, was trying to do a lot more kind of modern Italian interpretations, which I don't really agree with. I think stick to the classics, and if it's not, if it's right, just try to do that as best as you can, rather than putting some fucking foam on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. you obviously got a classic education when you moved to London. Do you still seeing that from your chefs coming in, or is that dying out in the industry?
I try to kind of emulate that. You know, like Derby's is a very traditional kitchen. You know, you've got a proper bakery, you've got a butchery section, this whole fish comes in, you learn about charcuterie, you learn how to make a real sauce, the traditional way, and even the design of it, it's a classic sort of Athanor, sort of solid top grill, gas, open fire. Do you know what I mean? There's not too many gadgets. We don't have a water bath in there. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it's real cooking. So, and to be honest with you, it sounds like a sales pitch, but it is also. I mean, that's how I'm recruiting. Hmm. You know, I think I've been fully staffed now for quite a while, but I also, it's hard work. So I'm now taking the approach where we're kind of top heavy in the kitchen with sort of Sue's, Junior Sue's, and then just brand new green guys.
Yeah, and training them up across all these things. Yeah.
Yeah, and hoping they'll stick with us, not just go as soon as they've learned.
Yeah, because a lot of that stuff, like a mate of mine helps run Swaledale, the butcher up in Yorkshire. And he said when he started there, they were selling a lot of whole animals, or at least sending big chunks of animals down to London. And now a huge amount of what they do is like the butchery's done there, basically, rather than in restaurants.
Yeah.
And that must just be because the skills aren't there for people to do it in-house, it's or the
skills,
space. Or
it's the skills. Time. It's also the workforce.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, also the people's pay. It's hard.
Yeah, right,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? There's not really apprentices.
Yeah.
You know? Everyone needs 30-odd K minimum.
Straight off the
bat,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, so, to, you know, if you can take out some of those elements, then great. But, you know, we're not. Do you know what I mean?
And
I'm using it as a way to try to keep the food cost down, but also as a way to keep that tradition in the restaurant and hope that it's training people and
hanging out,
you know?
You then obviously went to work for Raymond, as you said, at Le Manoir. Apparently the most magical place in the world. I mean, I read Marco's book and he said, you know, you've got 200 people living there, you play football games, the chefs versus the waiters. It's like being at a big boarding school or like a university.
Yeah, mad.
Yeah.
Like, was it as magical as he found it?
It really was. Yeah, like, and that's it. Like, I didn't go to college, but I went to study in Oxford.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was like that.
People talk about it like a utopia. Like it's
And also the it's a bit of a kind of your university days, I guess, like that or army. Do you know what I mean?
Because
it is very regimented, or was certainly when I was there. You know, it was such a traditional kitchen. You know, you go in, it's like you could be a commis 1, 2, 3 up to sort of demi chef, chef de party. Try to achieve a chef de party thing took me like a year and a half.
Really?
Whatever. Yeah. And I'd already
worked. You were going in experience. Yeah.
I was going in experience. Yeah. You know what I mean? I went in as a demi and it was like so hard to get that chef de party role.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm shit, but I don't know.
What was Raymond Blanc like as a boss?
Incredible. And like, I'm not just saying that. He was like, you know, I was lucky enough to sort of be in the Manoir for 2 years just working there. But then I opened up the Emirates football stadium for him, where my wife and I set up the Diamond Club, which is like the restaurant in there, which is like kind of one of the first times, I guess, good food has been associated with football.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was supposed to be almost like a du jour version of Le Manoir in there. And that's where I really got to sort of build a relationship with RB, because it was his gig. I was representing him, so I was working on the recipes with him.
Yeah,
and I was his. Me and Sarah were his point of contact in the business. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to know him on a very personal level. Do you know what I mean? And he's always been hugely supportive to everything I've done, from, you know, the early dairy days, coming in to visit us and shout about us in any publication that he might get to sort of recommend us to, advice to. And in Derby's as well. And we recently hosted his 40th anniversary in Le Manoir in Derby's, which, you know, he gave up his free time to come along to that. So that's like, obviously he was humbled, but I was overwhelmed.
Yeah. Amazing.
Obviously Clapham's other big heavyweight is Adam Byatt. Did you guys ever have like beef?
That's funny. No, do you know what? Because like, I think Adam would have been also inspirational for what I do. Do you know what I mean? Like, especially setting up in Clapham, if you could see if Trinity was successful doing what he was doing back before he's in his new iteration, that was kind of, we were comfortable going in and pushing the boat out with the food that we were doing in the dairy.
There's enough of an appetite for it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously we were very different, you know, in style and everything like that, but it was definitely, you know, inspirational to see what he'd done.
Shea Bruce, you a fan of that or not?
Hugely. Yeah. And also, I just, to be honest with you, I don't know whether it's an age thing. A lot of chefs, when they get a little bit older, you really start to kind of fall more and more in love with kind of classic cooking and no bullshit.
Yeah.
And I guess if you, I just don't like bullshit cooking, you know.
Matt Christmas is a very talented man.
Yes. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's inspiring to see the food that he does. It's not like stuff he's putting up on Instagram. It's like, it's almost could be an incredible fucking nana or matriarch cooking it. It's from the heart. You know what I mean? It's real cooking.
You ended up running the food for the Great Scotland Yard Hotel in London.
Yeah.
We had John Williams from the Ritz on a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling us how he loves sticking with the classics in every aspect of life,
but
especially in the afternoon tea offering. You completely went the opposite way. What were you offering for the afternoon tea?
Fucking Jesus, I'm trying to remember now. We were doing...
It was like St. John inspired and stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted it to be a lot more savoury. I'm not really like... I'm not a pastry chef. Obviously, I've got skills in that avenue, but it's not, wouldn't be my sort of major thing. Right. So I don't like real pretty, overly sugary things either. Do you know what I mean? So I wanted to take more of a savoury route on it and I would get a bit more personal with it. So we were doing... Also, there was a being a tea room, we wanted to have a bit of a nod to kind of some Indian culture as well. So we were, imagine St. John opening Indian restaurants, I guess, you know, of snacks.
Yeah.
So we were doing Welsh rarebit. We were doing like kind of spicy sausage rolls, you know, like curried sausage rolls and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And decent sandwiches and rarebits and stuff, you know. Mm. So that was what we wanted for it. And I thought it was quite a nice contrast in such a pretty room.
Yeah.
To have something that's a little bit more Moorish, something you might get in a camp.
Mention the Great Scotland Yard. Do you ever fall out with critics? Because Jay Rayner
fucking ripped me a new one.
He ruined you, didn't he? He said it may well be the worst restaurant from a critically acclaimed chef ever reviewed. Obviously, a huge fan of your other places.
Yeah.
But he said he sort of accused you of taking fast money and fucking off.
Yeah.
Did you fall out with him? Like, what happens when you read something like that? Do you call him up and be like, Jay, mate, what's going on?
No, like, it was a real kicking. Do you know what I mean? And I felt... I was like, I was always due one. I've never had a kicking, and since then as well. You know, for whatever reason, I think we've always worked hard and you know, been honest and not overcharged for anything that we've ever done. I think suddenly if I've taken this role to go into something big, sort of huge, big fit out place, I guess it just didn't suit me. It didn't suit, you know, I'd gone from the dairy in this dilapidated old building to a refurbished fucking $500 million or whatever, 80 million, I don't know what it was. So it just didn't suit me. What I didn't like about that was him presuming I was earning loads of money because,
He's
you should have looked at my fucking bank balance. I actually wasn't. You know what I mean? It was I actually wasn't.
No.
So that's, I don't like that. Yeah. I think that's cunty.
Yeah.
But also what I didn't like was that it wasn't that bad. There's no way it was bad. It was like, I had really good chefs in there. You know, I had a budget for good cooks.
Yeah.
There's no way it was that bad. I think I don't like dishonest reviews. You know what I mean? He didn't like it he didn't like the uniforms. He didn't like the art. He didn't like the approach.
Right, and he sort of ran with that. And
then he slagged off the veggie dishes. Do you know what I mean? And it's just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And then had a personal attack on me.
It was quite an easy one to attack there because you were such a, and still are, such a famous chef in London. And it was your first movement away from what you were doing previously, right?
But do you know what? I still don't fall out over it. Do you know what I mean? I could easily say, like, it wasn't nice. No. But like...
Yeah.
Neither is he, you know.
Yeah. I think we should get some food out, Benny. What have you made for the wonderful Robin Gill? Each week you obviously make some dishes for...
I've made a minestrone.
Oh, I like a minestrone.
I thought you liked a minestrone. And then I also made... I was so deflated. Well, they are deflated.
Oh.
I made some little cheese gougères to go alongside it. Like,
I also
tasty
like
little,
some cheesy gougères.
But they've...
collapsed.
They've collapsed. I mean, maybe you could like help me...
resuscitate them.
We'll make a hole in the bottom of the straw.
They've got holes in the bottom.
Well, Ben, as you get that out of the floor kitchen, famous floor kitchen.
Minestrone was the first dish I ever cooked.
Really?
Right?
Yeah, I opened a tin and I put it in a kettle and turned it on.
Wow. And that's quite incredible.
In a kettle, yeah.
I was about 11 and my mum was out or whatever and I was starving and I opened a tin of minestrone, didn't know how to heat it up and I put it in a kettle.
Kind of genius, in a way.
It's
kind
I got a hot put the kettle.
Yeah. We're going to do some quick go-to chef questions. So basically, first thing which comes to your head, the biggest nightmare day you can recall at work in your whole career?
I had it quite recently. I basically was potentially having a life-changing opportunity of someone who was interested in our bakery coming in and was going to do a full bakery tasting of all our products, our bagels and all that kind of stuff. And that morning, I come in early to make sure we're all ready. It's a Thursday. and one of the busiest days in Derby's as well, because of the embassy was like completely, you know, just like hundreds of people coming in. And I walk in, the first thing I see is my main chef, guy who does all the bagels, George, the backbone of that side of the business, the guy who developed the bagels and, you know, helped me.
The bagel guy.
With his 2 feet in an ice bath. And I was like, what the fuck's happened? And he went, one of the lads had put a half big gastro, so not like a full length gastro, like a half one filled with stock in the lower deck oven. So when he went to pull it, didn't realise that it was only a half gastro, pulled it real fast, all the stock went all over his feet.
Jesus.
So he's out of action.
Yeah.
Then that has a knock on effect to some guys are coming in to look at the, I'm having this potential tasting. So suddenly I've got to jump on the bagel section. I haven't even fucking done them a service on there. We're getting slammed. The ticket machine is coming in.
That noise.
Take out, all this kind of stuff. I've got like, you know, different style bagels. I was going down hard. Right in the middle of it all, someone on the estate where we're situated had authorized replanting all my planters. So I had all this beautiful bronze fennel and mint, all this like looking great, or terrace all looking good, expecting this this potentially life-changing client to come in. They pulled it all up, soil all over my terrace. I'm all like, what the fuck are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. Like completely freaking out. Go back in. Going down hard on bagels. Then I see one of my kitchen porters comes running down the stairs in a panic. And I go, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I go upstairs and one of the chefs is down on the floor, like having a fucking, like a seizure.
Jesus.
I'm like, what the actual? And then I'm looking at my watch going, this visit is happening.
Oh, no way.
Now, you know, and I was just going down so, so hard. So then we had to get him out of the business and looked after, and so I'm like 3 or 4 down. Then I'm looking at my watch, it's like 11:45, this guy's about to arrive, and I'm like, you know, just the place is upside down.
Yeah.
We're not ready for the tasting, we're not ready for lunch. If I'm going to be taken away for lunch, we're already 2 down on that side. It was just horrendous.
And well, I mean, is there a happy ending to the story?
The happy ending was that they didn't show up. They 10 minutes before this potential client to come in,
canceled.
Pulled it, cancelled it, rearranged it. Do you know what I mean?
Great, you can stay in the shit and do bagels and lunch.
So we got out of it in the end, but it was just like, what is going on? Like,
that feeling is
horrific. Robin, please try some minestrone. There's a bowl there. What about the rudest custom you've ever had?
You've got the smallest bowls ever there, by the way.
I had a table in the dairy who just had smashed a tremendous amount of wine, and right at the end decided not to pay for it, so they only had one. Myself, Lewis, my restaurant manager were there. They were the last to leave, or last in the business, and we were like, look, like, we can show you the bottles that you've had, pull them out of the bin, these are the bottles, this is what you're drinking, this is it on the system. And they were just like, nope, we're not paying for it. And then they started to slate everything that they had, the food was shit, blah, 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 all of this kind of stuff, to which I was just like, try to call the police.
Yeah.
They won't do anything because they're like, it's an argument between
you. Yeah, it's you guys.
And you just have to sort it out, you know what I mean?
Fuck.
So then I said, right, and they still had 3/4 of a bottle of wine left. So I just said, right, I've had enough of you, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I went to grab the wine and the glass that she was drinking out of.
What's that?
She sees me come, I grab the bottle, she sees me going for the glass, she throws not just the contents of it, the whole glass at my face.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, not the ending, but is the bit before that premeditated? You come in, you drink it, is that...
I don't think so. Like, I honestly think that they were so hammered and just nasty.
Yeah, right, it was just
nasty, do you know what I mean? Just up themselves, do you know what I mean? How bad is that? I mean, what can you do?
Nothing.
What is wrong with people?
Right, let me try this.
Yeah, try that. It's actually very good, Ben. I've said something. It's absolutely delicious.
Mm. What do you mean, actually?
Well, sorry, did I say
I'm smashing out the pot. It's maybe a tiny bit salty.
No, you're in great form. That's fucking lovely. Gorgeous.
I love doing big walks with my dog, and I have, like, I'm a real geek. I love bringing a little bit of soup out with me.
Yeah, this nice. In a thermos.
Yeah.
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 You from love the floor kitchen. I do, yeah.
Should we go to food, Benny?
Yeah, go on then. Go to delivery order.
Berbera. And clap them.
Oh, that's so good.
It's solid every single time. It's nice ingredients.
Mm.
Pizza I get the Diavolo with extra tomato sauce and extra salami. And nice. And I put some capers and parmesan on it at home because they don't do the capers anymore. I don't want to pay £3 for a few capers.
Yeah. No,
what about the dish you cook the most midweek?
Roast chicken.
Really?
I just love roast chicken. That's what I'm going to have tonight. I'm going to have roast chicken and a Caesar salad with a baked potato.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that your favourite thing in the world?
It is, yeah.
Just can't go wrong with it. And
what's
I just,
the secret to a good Caesar? Because... You thought you'd cracked it.
I do an Alistair Little Caesar dressing, yeah.
Do you know what I do in my Caesar? I put in, because one of my favorite two things, and I've already mentioned them as well, but is capers. Mm. And those big, you know, those olive picante mm-hmm. olives. I blend them into the mix. So it just gives it that extra sort of inami, a little bit of a kick, salty, savory.
Yeah.
And obviously a caper and olive complements an anchovy and parmesan and stuff. Loads of parmesan in the mix.
I'm going to nick that, I reckon.
Yeah, it's a go-to.
Yeah.
And a little bit of the brine in there too.
From the olives or from the caper, either.
Yeah, either.
Have you ever had a meal deal?
What the fuck, a meal deal again?
You know, like you go to like a supermarket.
Oh.
And you get like a sandwich, crisps and a drink.
No, I haven't. Never.
No chef has ever answered this question. No.
I didn't even know what it was.
No. Yeah.
It was like a punter, like you go on a train, you get a meal deal.
Oh, God, but no.
No.
Okay. No, if I'm going traveling, one of my favorite things to do is actually to make a sandwich as well.
Yeah.
Well, we're going away on Wednesday and we're purposely getting chicken in now to have roast chicken sandwiches to take with us on Wednesday.
Yeah, there you go.
What about your go-to random fridge snack combination? Mm. Sorry, I had the mouthful administrator there. You open the fridge, you put weird things together. What's the weirdest thing?
Weirdest? I don't know if it's weird.
Or maybe not weird, but...
Let me think. I'm sure I've done some horrendous things. I actually went through a stage during COVID of like, if I was kind of covert meeting friends for drinks, as we often did, would be coming home and then raiding the fridge to see what sort of filthy snacks I have.
Yeah.
Always, I love pickles. I love spicy things. So there'd be some form of kimchi and cheese. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a fried egg of some sort.
What is your guilty pleasure? Like a single dish that just cheers you up?
If you've got a nice sort of ragu, you know, like if you have a nice sort of bolognese the next day, I almost like it nearly almost cold from the fridge on like a layered... like butter that thick, you know, half a centimeter thick of like really salty butter on a bit of bread, like a fucking bolognese sandwich. Do you know what I mean? It's just nice.
So good. Yeah. Right. Well, we're going to finish with the go-to locations. So what's your go-to weeknight restaurant?
Josephine actually has become one. I know it might sound a bit glam, but it's just, I love it. And it's like not too far. You know, it's only in Fulham.
Mm. Go-to pub?
I love the Coach and Houses. Oh, sorry, Coach and Horses.
Soho.
What about Devonshire, an Irishman?
Yeah, I love Devonshire and I love the music there. I'll go in on a Tuesday to Devonshire.
Yeah.
I did avoid it, and I'm sure Oisin would laugh at this, but I did avoid it with all the crowds for a while. Yeah. You know what I mean? But because I sometimes like a quiet pint. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
Queuing up half an hour for Guinness in a pet smoking area wasn't great at the height of it, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, but it's such a great bar, and especially
great.
The music is awesome.
What about your dream long weekend getaway, foodie wise?
I cannot wait to go to Myrna's new place, Osip.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Osip like, V2. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, now V2 is just about to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But like his version one, absolutely awesome. The old pharmacy next door.
Yeah.
Like smash both of them over like a weekend, some nice walks with the dog.
A banging little high street there.
Yeah, and actually then you've also got, oh my God.
You've got crazy Matt's Kitchen, if you've ever been there.
No, I have not been there.
You're doing a lot of PR for Matt.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone else has gone to Matt's Kitchen.
No, I think maybe it doesn't exist.
No.
Just down a little bit further, Nicholas Balfe's place.
Mm.
Oh, Home.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah, I've stayed there.
Yeah.
Nice.
That is beautiful as well. So you can nearly do a little trip, you know, hit both of them and the old pharmacy, gorgeous.
Well, you've done a wonderful job today, Robin. You're an inspiration to not only the London food scene, but the wider world. And your story is amazing. And also your restaurants are as good, if not
better.
Thank
you very much.
We're hoping that the dairy is going to come back.
Yeah.
And we'll see you and Adam Byatt wrestling each other on Clapham Common very soon. We're just going to finish off with, what is your go-to three-course meal? So it's essentially a desert island meal, but we're trying to put the go-to branding on it as much as possible.
Fruit and mare.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A big fruit and mare, loads of oysters, dressed crab, some nice soda bread or sourdough, some nice prawns. Like, so that's one. That's the starter. Steak and daffamoise potatoes, like a nice big rib of beef, daffamoise and fries. I want fries as well.
Yeah, why not?
Double up. Béarnaise sauce, salad, and a lemon tart.
Ugh.
Or tiramisu. Lemon tart, I think I'll go for in that one.
Yeah, nice. After that, you want something...
Yeah, a little bit sharp.
That's tartness to you. Yeah.
Well, Robin, thank you so much for coming in. You've been absolutely wonderful. We're looking forward to seeing you down at, you know, Bolton Rye, Derby's, wherever we want to go, but hopefully also
the
dairy one day.
Thanks for having me.
Those are your go-tos. We're going to ask you, what song do you want us to play you out with? And just when you think of that, we're going to say, guys, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating, comments. It helps other people find us. We'll be back again next week. But Robin, what do you want us to play you out with? A rock and roller? Maybe one of your dad's tunes? I don't know.
Let's Dance, David Bowie.
Robin, those are your go-tos. Thank you so much, mate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's dance. Don't feel your grace to fall. Let's dance, for fear this night is o'er.